Following are comments on Shakespeare's Henry V, Act 1. Consideration like an angel came and whipped the offending Adam out of him. The Archbishop of Canterbury, while marveling at the young Henry V's personal reformation, tells the Bishop of Ely that since a bill in Parliament is threatening to reduce church revenues, he means to encourage the young king to pursue his claim to the French throne. In Act 1, Scene 1, the prelates spend a bit of time discussing their wonderment at the transformation of the new king, Henry V, in the brief time since his father died. The Archbishop of Canterbury marvels that as soon as Henry IV died, something happened to Prince Hal. Quote unquote, "Consideration like an angel came and whipped the offending Adam out of him, leaving his body as a paradise to envelop and contain celestial spirits." Act 1, Scene 1, lines 28 through 31. The two churchmen's main object, however, is to remove current pressure from their own estate and redirect it somewhere else. Parliament has called for seizing some of their lands, so they need to create a diversion of the sort that occurred during the reign of Henry IV, who faced serious internal troubles. The Archbishop of Canterbury points out that if this reiterated bill is successful, quote unquote, "we lose the better half of our possession, consisting of the church's secular holdings in England." Act 1, Scene 1, line 8. Giving the new king money to wage war in France would be a good investment. Canterbury proposes that with regard to France, the church should, quote unquote, "give a greater sum than ever at one time the clergy yet did to his predecessor's part withal." Act 1, Scene 1, lines 79 through 81. Since the French ambassador is about to be granted an audience with King Henry, the churchmen must get to work. The prelates surrounding the young ruler are as Machiavellian a bunch as may be imagined, and Canterbury is about to give him a lecture on succession law that will cost England and especially France many lives. "France being ours, we'll bend it to our awe, or break it all to pieces." King Henry V asks the Archbishop to justify his claim that France belongs to him. Canterbury details the claim, and Henry decides to invade. The king is presented with the Dauphin's gift of tennis balls, and Henry tells his lords to prepare for war. In Act 1, Scene 2, the priests cite a confusing historical record to refute the Salic law barring claims based on a female's rights. Edward III had claimed France based upon the fact that his mother, Isabella, was the daughter of Philip IV of France and Joan I of Navarre. Edward's claim started the Hundred Years' War on the continent, which lasted on and off from 1337 through 1453. Now the French say Henry V's claim is similarly disabled since it was based on Edward III's, which they refused to recognize as valid. Undaunted, Canterbury brings to bear eminently forgettable tidbits such as, quote unquote, "King Pepin, which deposed Childeric, did as heir general, being descended of Blithild, which was daughter to King Clothair, make claim and title to the crown of France." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 65 through 68. With this Faustian factuality, Shakespeare and the Archbishop are having some fun at the expense of the dry historical record. What matters is now, so Canterbury is comfortable making light of the musty old foundation for current claims, as he says, quote unquote, "so that, as clear as is the summer's sun, King Pepin's title and Hugh Capet's claim, King Louis his satisfaction, all appear to hold in right and title of the female." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 86 through 89. What's sauce for the goose, as the saying goes, is sauce for the gander. Canterbury insists that Henry V must take his place amongst the English kings who have asserted their claim to France. "Henry's fellow monarchs," says his uncle Exeter, quote unquote, "expect that you should rouse yourself as did the former lions of your blood." Act 1, Scene 2, lines 123 through 124. King Henry is quickly resolved to do precisely this, and Canterbury tells him to take 1/4 of England's available troops to France to prosecute his claim. The rest will stay at home and take care of important menaces, such as, in Westmoreland's phrasing, quote-unquote, the weasel Scot, who is sure to come marauding once the king sails for France. Act 1, Scene 2, line 70. Henry agrees and declares, quote-unquote, France being ours, we'll bend it to our awe, or break it all to pieces. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 225 through 226. The king calls in the waiting French ambassadors, who will deliver to him a little gift from the heir to the French throne, the Dauphin. Evidently, the French crown prince still thinks of Henry V not as a mature ruler, but as a prodigal youth, the very one that many of Shakespeare's audience members will know from the delightful Henry IV plays, in which Prince Hal, close companion of Sir John Falstaff, causes his father great anxiety before finally taking on the responsibility that properly belongs to him. The Dauphin's mocking claim is that the wastrel Hal is still playing games, thus the trunk full of tennis balls. At least tennis is an eminently French game, as it developed from a medieval sport called jeu de paume, which is somewhat like handball. Anyway, the Dauphin offers this gift along with a contemptuous admonition, quote-unquote, let the dukedoms that you claim hear no more of you. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 257 through 258. King Henry's bold response stuns the court. He concludes it with, quote unquote, tell the Dauphin his jest will savor but of shallow wit when thousands weep more than did laugh at it. Act 1, Scene 2, lines 295 through 297. Henry has full command of state policy and martial rhetoric, and shows that he understands the deadly nature of the so-called game he is about to initiate. He is clearly not who the Dauphin thinks he is, not anymore. Whether we, the modern audience, like what the once amiable and humorous Prince Hal has become now that he is King Henry V, is another matter. It is the ordinary people of England and France who will suffer the consequences of the war this young man seems so determined to prosecute in the name of his alleged claim to the French throne. Thanks for listening. This audio lecture was recorded on Tuesday, November 4th, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition 4-volume genre-based format.